The Speaker of the Nova Scotia House of Assembly grants permission to record the televised proceedings of the legislature for use in schools and for other purposes, such as private study, research, review, or newspaper summary. Television and radio broadcasters may make use of recorded excerpts of the televised proceedings in their news or public affairs programs for the purposes of fair and accurate reports of proceedings. Program material may not be used for political party advertising, election campaigns, or any other politically partisan activity. Any other commercial use or rebroadcast of these televised proceedings requires the express written approval of the Speaker.
And we're now going to start question period. The time is 3:18. We will go to 4:48. And I will recognize the Leader of the Official Opposition.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is for the Premier. Yesterday, I told the host about a family in my riding who qualified for the caregiver allowance. Matthew and Guilin care for their son with multiple challenges to his health. They met all the government's stringent criteria and were approved. But because they received social assistance, the Department of Community Service clawed back 70% of the allowance. So my question for the Premier is, why is your government giving on one hand to a family in true need and taking away with the other?
The Honourable the Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I want the Leader of the Opposition to know that there are many stories, just like the one he has just related in this province, with people who are caring for people in their own homes. The design of this program is to assist, to the extent that the government can, those people with providing that care. It was decided in the design of the program that it would be taxed in the hands or would be treated as income in the hands of the recipient. And that is why, although I don't know the particulars of that particular situation, that is why that situation presents itself.
The Leader of the Official Opposition on his first supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The government considers the caregiver's allowance earned income under the rules for receiving social assistance. Yesterday and today, the Premier said the reason Matthew and Guilin were losing most of their allowance because the allowance was taxable income. Mr. Speaker, the Premier would know this had nothing to do with this couple having its money clawed back. It has to do with a policy within the Department of Community Services, and he has the power to change that policy. So my question to the Premier is, will you tell the Department of Community Services to stop the practice of clawing back the allowance for families who need our help?
The Honourable the Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The design of the program, as we found it when we came into office, and the application thereof is what you're seeing. As the Minister of Health has indicated on many previous occasions now, it is our intention to monitor the progress of the program as it goes along, to hear the advice that we're receiving, not just from the member opposite, but other members of the legislature, and take that into account when we are in a position to launch our own program next year.
The Leader of the Official Opposition on his final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I want to remind the Premier what he had to say in 2005 when he complained that the $250 fuel rebate for low-income families were being clawed back by the Department of Community Services. And I am quoting here, "Why is your government forcing people on social assistance to choose between being cold or being hungry?" End of quote. So my question for the Premier, Mr. Speaker, is will he commit to removing the clawback provision for families who qualify for the caregivers program immediately and do what is right?
The Honourable the Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Before this government came to power, there was no assistance for anyone, Mr. Speaker. It is because of the work of the Minister of Health that this program moved forward. We are doing an analysis of it. We're going to make sure that it is the best fit for as many people as we can serve. We are, in fact, going to design the best possible program we can, and we're going to do it so that we provide the services that are needed and so that we also, Mr. Speaker, live up to our commitment to live within our means.
The Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question through you is to the Premier. To date, since the election, there appears to be a sense of secrecy over everything this government is doing. The Premier told the media, and I quote, "a process is required that works for government and all opposition parties," end of quote. My question is this. What is the Premier prepared to change in the existing process in order to achieve a greater balance of openness with his government?
The Honourable the Premier.
Well, Mr. Speaker, the first thing we did is we lowered the fees for the Freedom of Information.
The Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party on our first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, let's move on. 9 of 12 members on the front bench have had experience as critics and understand very well the role of a critic in opposition. In a recent media scrum, the Premier said he would, and I quote, "continue to try every day to operate this House for the people of Nova Scotia and that it is important to have a respectful House." Mr. Speaker, my question, it is the belief of our caucus that we are not seeing that openness of which he speaks, and my question to the Premier is, what direction has he given his ministers to help achieve that openness?
The Honourable the Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. We are providing advance notice of ministerial statements. In fact, they've been congratulating us on that, Mr. Speaker. We're prepared to consult on bills. We're going to continue to do that, Mr. Speaker. I read the comments of the member opposite in which she said that I had only ever called her once. Well, I met with her in my office as well, Mr. Speaker, in 2 months. And I can tell you that in the entire time that I was there, I rarely ever received a call from the government.
The Honourable the Leader of the Progressive Conservative on her final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, to suggest that the ministers need more time because of, quote, growing pains is not acceptable. For example, the minister from Timberley Prospect worked well with me as education critic, as did the minister from King's West. Those ministers and this government know full well the importance of working with critics. My question to the Premier is, why is the same sense of cooperation with critics in the opposition parties not being shown by the ministers in your cabinet?
The Honourable the Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I know this was raised the other day in the context of a scrum. I canvassed through many of my colleagues, very few of us can ever remember being consulted with respect to briefings of departments by the previous government. Mr. Speaker, that just didn't happen. They may think it happened, but it didn't, Mr. Speaker. But nonetheless, that's not the point. The point is to make this House work. So the question of consultation and the question with respect to replying to the requests of the opposition is a two-way street. If they have questions that they'd like to ask, if they have information they'd like to send to us, if they have information they require, they should call.
The Leader of the Official Opposition.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is for the Minister of Health. This government introduced a caregiver allowance in August. At that time, the minister said there was a great need out there, and the people are looking for help now. Caregivers who need help got their hopes up. Yet recently, this government changed the information it's providing to people looking for assistance. If you check the government's website, it has laid out a more and more confusing criteria. So my question for the Minister of Health, has your department changed the information on its website to discourage people from applying for this program?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And I'd like to thank the Honourable Member for his question. Mr. Speaker, caregivers in this province are very important to this government, and that's why we decided to go forward with the program that was designed by the former government with the support of the official opposition. Mr. Speaker, as this program is a new program in the province, we want to provide the best information to people with respect to what the criteria are, and we will be continually updating our communications on that program as we identify the ways that need to get information out there.
The Leader of the Official Opposition on your first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, the changes that they have made make it more difficult for Nova Scotians looking for this program to get the assistance they were looking for and required and were promised, quite frankly, on the announcement. Mr. Speaker, the only thing this government has changed about this program is its website. Nova Scotia families who need help were misled by this government. So my question for the Minister is why did your government change a website to justify rejecting people in need instead of changing the program to make it work?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I regret to that the member of the leader of the official opposition has characterized the actions of the department as misleading. Mr. Speaker, we have laid out the criteria for the caregivers program so that people who are interested in this program will understand what the criteria are. And we will continue to have that website. We will update that website as needed, Mr. Speaker.
The Leader of the Official Opposition on his final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, yesterday the Minister called this a Tory plan supported by the Liberals. In fact, Mr. Speaker, it is a Liberal idea picked up by the Tories and messed up by the NDP. That is why they have changed their website, and that is why they refuse to admit how many people have applied for this allowance and how many people they have rejected. So my question for the Minister is, when will you admit that this program is not delivering what you promised and fix it?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And first of all, I would say to the Honourable Member, it's important not to mislead the House by indicating that I've refused to provide the numbers. Mr. Speaker, I have made it very clear on the floor of this House that getting the numbers is difficult because this service has been devolved to the DHAs. And, Mr. Speaker, we will have those numbers. We will have those numbers very soon. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Clare.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Minister of Transportation and Infrastructure Renewal. Mr. Speaker, in 2007, the federal government announced the Building Canada Fund. This fund is dedicated to major infrastructure projects, particularly in priority areas such as the National Highway System, transit, water and wastewater treatment, and green energy. The portion for our two major municipalities, Halifax Regional Municipality and the Cape Breton Regional Municipality, are set to receive is over $198 million. The problem is, Mr. Speaker, it has been 2 years and the agreement has not yet been signed in full, leaving numerous infrastructure projects hanging in the wings. So my first question to the Minister is, what is your government doing to expedite the process to get this funding approved?
The Honourable Minister of Transportation and Infrastructure Renewal.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I thank the member for his important question on a topic where I can assure him that it is a constant important matter when it comes to communication, particularly with the federal government. During the short time that I've been the Minister of Transportation and Infrastructure Renewal, on a number of occasions I've had the opportunity to place phone calls to appropriate federal ministers, and I want to assure that member opposite the response that I've received from federal ministers, John Baird in particular. The Honourable John Baird has been extremely cooperative on a number of occasions. At one time, actually, he contacted me at home on the weekend with some information. In addition to that, the Honourable Peter McKay has been very forthright, following up calls and contacts that we've had. And I'm aware, of course, of the difficulties and the frustrations, particularly with the municipalities. I encourage the municipalities to keep us in the loop, Honourable Member, and in addition to that, I encourage the members of the mayors of those particular municipalities to make sure that they contact Ottawa in the forthright manner that I've done on a number of occasions.
The Honourable Member for Clare on his first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, this agreement runs out in 2013. You know, that does not leave much time for tenders and actual construction for potential projects like libraries or road and bridge construction. So while this government dawdles, the clock is running out for these projects to start and finish before the 2013 deadline. So my question to the Minister is, will you take action to make certain this agreement is signed immediately?
The Honourable Minister of Transportation and Infrastructure Renewal.
Thank you again, Mr. Speaker, and thank you to the member opposite. I wish to point out that because of the good communication between the federal government and this new government here in Nova Scotia, that in the year 2009-2010, there will be approximately $70 million worth of projects that will be brought forward in this province. That is in the Department of Transportation alone. And during the year 2010-2011, there will be $85 million that has already been assigned to projects within this province. The point that I would like to make, and I encourage members of the municipalities to be very clear on the fact, you know, give us a call, we'll help you out in your communications with Ottawa.
The Honourable Member for Clare on your final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, the Prime Minister stated yesterday that 90% of Ottawa's $29 billion plan to stimulate the economy for this fiscal year has been committed to specific projects. So, Mr. Speaker, this is a critical matter for the province. They need to reach an agreement with the federal government for HRM and CBRM in advance and infrastructure projects. So hearing the statement from the Prime Minister, the province needs to act quickly to sign off on this portion of the Building Canada Fund. So again to the Minister, if given the Prime Minister's statement, can we expect our major cities to still receive their allotted funding?
The Honourable Minister of Transportation and Infrastructure Renewal.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and thank you to the member opposite. One of the concerns that have been brought to my attention is the criteria that's used at times when it comes to the federal government. And in the exchange and back and forth, whatever federal minister you're dealing with, you have to make it quite clear the projects which you consider a priority that fit within that criteria. I look forward to meeting with Mayor Morgan or Mayor Kelly at any time, because as far as I'm concerned in the communications that we've had with federal ministers through this process, there is some give, there is some take, there are some positive communications. Thus far, the provincial government in this province has done very well when it comes to that money and accessing it, make sure that across this province, from one end to the other, we're going to have that dollars. I share the frustrations of those two mayors. I can assure you I look forward to working with them to end those frustrations.
The Honourable Member for Argyle.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. My question is to the Minister of Health. Yesterday, during question period, and, of course, during estimates, I spoke of Nikhil Home for Special Care, their desperate issue of getting their 22-bed expansion going again. This afternoon marks the last few hours that the board may award the tender that has been open for 2 months. As a matter of fact, they have about, 24 minutes. Madam Minister, Mr. Speaker, through you, the time is now to help the residents of Southwest Nova Scotia by allowing Nikhil to adjust their service agreement. Does the Minister have some good news for Nikhil today?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and I want to thank the Honourable Member for his question. Mr. Speaker, I met with the Honourable Member shortly before this legislature came back into session and with the administrator of that home, because that home was having difficulty with respect to bringing a project in as approved on time, on budget. Mr. Speaker, the budget has escalated considerably, And as I said to the honorable member yesterday during estimates, we are very prepared to continue to work with Nikhil and with the honorable member to see if we can find a resolution for this situation. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
The honorable member for Argyll on his first supplementary.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and I thank the minister for that comment. Though, as I've said, the tender has been open for almost 2 months now. Ample time for the Department of Health to come up with a solution. The administrator and I met with you almost a month ago, probably 3 weeks ago now, giving you plenty of time to direct the department to resolve this issue as well. You are the minister. What steps have you taken to help the Board of Directors and Nikhil Home for Special Care?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And Mr. Speaker, again, I met with the Honourable Member on very short notice, along with the Administrator, because I placed a great priority on working cooperatively with members of this chamber when they bring their issues to my attention. My staff have been working very hard with that organization to see what measures may be taken to reconcile the situation, and we are more than happy to continue to do so, Mr. Speaker. Thank you.
The honourable member for Argyll on his final supplementary.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. You know, I've given the solution on a couple of occasions now where the minister has to allow for a renegotiation of that service agreement to allow for the true cost of the project. We know, Mr. Speaker, when the service agreement was signed, that the estimate was incorrect. So it doesn't allow for a true cost of that tender. The tenders came in, yes, they came in high, but they do represent the Hanscom numbers that have been received. So I know we've been talking about the province not only being spent, only spending the money that they have. And, you know, this is money to be spent on a per diem at a later date. This is numbers going to be paid for when the construction is complete in probably 2011, 2012. Will you commit now to change the agreement and give Nikhil a go-ahead before the end of business today?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, these matters are often very complicated, and Mr. Speaker, changing that agreement may result in significantly higher costs to residents and their families in the future in those facilities, more costs than they're able to bear, Mr. Speaker. And additionally, we're talking about expenditure that's significantly more than what was estimated for this project. Other projects have been able to be brought in the long-term care sector on budget, Mr. Speaker. So we'll continue to work with Nikhil. But as I told the member yesterday, Mr. Speaker, this is not something that can be solved in 24 hours. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
The honourable member for Glace Bay.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Pleasure to see you today, Mr. Speaker.
Thank you.
Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Minister of Service, Nova Scotia, and Municipal Relations. Mr. Speaker, the Minister has announced that the Nova Scotia Utility and Review Board will be responsible for setting the price of gas. And as we all know, the Board regulates the electric utility, auto insurance, gaming, liquor licensing, assessment and expropriation, film classification, municipal and school board boundaries, and now, on a biweekly basis, the price of gas. They're going to hold public hearings on gas regulation, and, Mr. Speaker, it's not going to be cheap. In fact, when price setting was done by only a few bureaucrats behind closed doors, it still came to about $1.2 million price tag. So my question, Mr. Speaker, for the minister is, will the minister tell Nova Scotians how much more that they're going to have to pay as an additional cost of regulation?
The Honourable Minister of Service, Nova Scotia, and Municipal Relations.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. At this time, there will be no changes in the fees.
The Honourable Member for Glace Bay on his first supplementary.
As many will do, Mr. Speaker, I will try and figure out exactly what that means. Setting the price of gas affects Nova Scotians from Yarmouth to Glace Bay, from Caledonia to Inverness. They deserve to have a say in the Board's decision-making progress. Mr. Speaker, these price-setting hearings may be marginally more public than the closed-door policy of the previous government, but only if you happen to be in the community where the hearings are held. So my next question is to the Minister. Since setting the price for gas affects all municipalities, not just one, where is the Utility and Review Board going to be holding their public meetings?
The Honourable Minister of Service, Nova Scotia and Municipal Relations.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I would not be able to answer where they will be having their hearings. That is a question that would have to be directed to the Utility and Review Board.
The Honourable Member for Glace Bay on his final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, Nova Scotians are already paying an artificially high price at the pumps. Now, it looks like they're going to have to subsidize the UARB's travelling gas price roadshow. Mr. Speaker, for a lot of Nova Scotians, ironically, if they want to participate in the roadshow, they're going to have to get in their cars and buy a tank of gas and drive wherever the UARB might be on that particular day in order to be heard. So my final question for the Minister is, will the Minister tell us what Nova Scotians will be paying for the cost of outsourcing regulation?
The Honourable Minister of Service, Nova Scotia and Municipal Relations.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. There is no increased cost to the movement of the gas pricing to the Utility and Review Board.
The Honourable Member for Victoria of the Lakes.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question through you is to the Minister of Health, and it deals once again with the caregiver's allowance. Mr. Speaker, a constituent of mine in Georges River, Julia McCormick, has terminal cancer, and a year and a half ago was given 2 months to live. This brave woman has beaten the odds, but is no longer able to do much for herself. On top of this, recent hip surgery has left her immobile. Without a doubt, Ms. McCormick has trouble managing her personal needs, and she can't do laundry, clean, or prepare any meals. Mr. Speaker, the McCormick's financial status qualifies them for the program, yet their application was still rejected. My question to the Minister is, why would someone like Julia be refused assistance under the caregiver's allowance?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and I want to thank the Honourable Member for his question. Mr. Speaker, I don't know about the situation that he speaks of, but Mr. Speaker, this program is targeted to people who have very low incomes and the highest level of need that is determined after an assessment by the home care coordinators. And, Mr. Speaker, I just want to read for the Honourable Member from what his colleague, a former Minister of Health, said last night in Estimates. He said, after a lot of discussion, and I can say, you know, in Cabinet and otherwise, we spent a lot of time trying to come up with what kind of costs would be associated with the program, what kind of criteria might we want to put in it. So over the last number of months, of course, we were able to put the funding aside and we were able to get the program details done. And Mr. Speaker, as I've been saying, the program was designed by the previous government and the details was debated by the previous government. And Mr. Speaker, we will be reviewing this program and bringing forward our own in-house support program, Mr. Speaker.
I would ask the Minister that you would table that information, if you would, please. The Honourable Member for Victoria the Lakes on your first supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I'd also like to table a quote from the Minister on August 11th of 2009, where the Minister says, "We recognise the very important role that caregivers have in the lives of the people they care for. We know that caregivers need support themselves so that they can continue to provide care to their family members and friends." Mr. Speaker, Ms. McCormick's children have sacrificed greatly in order to keep their mother going. In the letter they wrote to me, they said for Ms. McCormick's daughter to keep her job, her son needed to come home from Ontario to take some burden off his sister. The Premier talked between May 5th and June 9th throughout the election campaign about the importance of seniors being able to stay in their homes. My question through you to the Minister is, will Ms. McCormick and people in similar situations to hers be able to get this caregiver's allowance and stay in her home where she is the most comfortable?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and I want to thank the Honourable Member. Mr. Speaker, this is not a universal program for all persons who are providing care. This is a targeted. This was designed by the previous government to be a targeted program for people who are eligible based on a number of criteria, including an eligibility test based on the level of need, Mr. Speaker. Thank you very much.
The Honourable Member for Victoria the Lakes on his final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. It's very interesting. We've asked for the numbers and we still haven't received them. We realize the importance of the caregivers program in Nova Scotia. Mr. Speaker, the Minister has said that they will in due time look the allowance program over and make necessary changes. We don't know how long it would be, Mr. Speaker. Next year may be too late for Ms. McCormick. My question to the Minister through you is, am I to take from everything you say in all your answers, both now and to other members in this House, that if I have Ms. McCormick's children contact your office, you will immediately look into this troubling situation?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my department is prepared if people feel that they were wrongly assessed on the home care assessment to do a review of that assessment. And we are perfectly happy to do that in the case of the Honourable Member. Let me say this, Mr. Speaker, as well. The budget is working its way through this House. There's an allocation in that budget for a particular amount of money for this program. And it was designed to support approximately 740-some caregivers in the province, Mr. Speaker. It is not a universal program. It is a targeted program. And in terms of how many people are receiving this program, we will be having that information available very soon, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Halifax, Clayton Park.
Thank you. Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Minister of Health. Today, during public accounts, we heard from officials of both the Department of Health and the Department of Health Promotion and Protection with regard to pandemic preparedness. During this session, I questioned the Chief Medical Officer around the issue of expanding the scope of practice for pharmacists so that they would be available to assist in administering vaccinations. During the election, a response was provided to the Pharmacy Association of Nova Scotia on behalf of the now Premier, which supported expanding the scope of practice for pharmacists. My question to the Minister of Health is, Mr. Speaker, has she recommended to the Deputy Minister of Health that we proceed with expanding the scope of practice for pharmacists in light of the H1N1 influenza?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, first of all, I want to thank the Honourable Member for raising the question. Mr. Speaker, the health of Nova Scotians is primary in the concerns of this government. We want to be able to manage and plan for the H1N1 virus in a very, very responsible way, Mr. Speaker. And certainly part of what we're doing is looking at the various providers that will be giving the vaccine when it becomes available, Mr. Speaker. Pharmacists certainly, in the scope of their practice, with some additional training, would be able to do this. However, Mr. Speaker, in the middle of a pandemic, the Chief Medical Officer has raised questions about the practicality of training a new group of professionals when we if we have an adequate supply of doctors, nurses, paramedics, etc. So that is the balance here, Mr. Speaker. We need to get ready for the pandemic right now.
The Honourable Member from Halifax, Clayton Park, on your first supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And, Mr. Speaker, it's interesting to note that departmental officials stated that they were working through the normal process when it comes to expanding the scope of practice for pharmacists. Yet yesterday, an article appeared in the New Brunswick newspaper, where a New Brunswick Pharmacy Association representative stated that Nova Scotia is considering a fast-tracking process for expanding the scope of practice. Although I realize the comments coming from a New Brunswick paper, it still comes from the director of the New Brunswick Pharmacists Association, so I think it's reputable. So my question to the minister is, could the minister please clarify, are we working through the normal process in terms of expanding the scope of practice, or is it in fact being fast-tracked in light of H1N1?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And Mr. Speaker, Dr. Bob Strang has been in contact with the pharmacists, and they will continue to have discussions. It's not anticipated at this stage, Mr. Speaker, that we will require pharmacists in the administration of the H1N1 vaccine.
The Honourable Member for Halifax, Clayton Park, on your final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, we all know that one of the biggest challenges facing the health delivery of health, really, in our province and in our country is the shortage of health professionals in all types of health services. So looking at expanded scopes of practice could be, in fact, an answer on a lot of levels. So my question to the Minister of Health is, could the Minister please indicate when we can expect recommendations around expanding the scope of practice for pharmacists here in Nova Scotia?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I would say to the Honourable Member, we are in the middle of doing very rigorous planning for a virus that we still have a fair amount of unknown questions around. Our primary focus is putting in place a regime for vaccination and encouraging all Nova Scotians to get the vaccine and additionally to practice good public health practices so we can try to contain the virus as much as possible. Mr. Speaker, I'm not sure that that is the environment in which we want to be taking our human resources in our department and diverting them into looking at working with groups around their scope of practice. This is a longer-term piece of work, Mr. Speaker, which would have to be done when we're not facing what potentially could be a very serious threat to the health of Nova Scotians.
The Honourable Member for Hants West.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, the economic recession has been difficult for everyone, especially the small business sector. The previous government in May made a pledge to the people of Nova Scotia and to the small business industry that a small business tax credit would drop from 5% to 2.5% over a three-year period. Will the Minister of Economic and Rural Development stand before this House today and commit to small business that he will indeed follow the previous government's lead and implement these tax cuts?
The Minister of Economic and Rural Development.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. and it gives me great pleasure to rise in my place today. And we do agree that certainly small business is very, very vital to Nova Scotia, and we will be looking at our own tax credits.
The Honourable Member from Hants West on your first supplementary.
Well, that's hardly a commitment, Mr. Minister. Mr. Speaker, there are over 12,000 small and medium-sized businesses in Nova Scotia, and they're truly the backbone of our provincial economy and represent the livelihoods of countless families. What is the government's plan to specifically help small business through these difficult times? And I think they'd like to know now, not down the road in 2 or 3 years when they're no longer in business.
The Honourable Minister of Economic and Rural Development.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, we have done quite a bit in 3 months with respect to small business in Nova Scotia. We've met with various departments within the provincial government. We met with the mayor of Cancel, as an example, a very, very small community that's in trouble. We've been to Shelburne. We talked to the Shelburne people. We met with the unions in Shelburne. Mr. Speaker, we've been doing a lot in a very, very short period of time, and we will continue. We will continue with consultations as we move towards assisting companies here in the province of Nova Scotia.
The Honourable Member for Hants West on your final supplementary.
Well, again, I hear no commitment in that, Mr. Speaker, and I guess the time for meeting is over and the time for action is now, and that's what small business is waiting for. Mr. Speaker, the tax burden is too high on all Nova Scotians. Lower taxes means more money in the people's pockets or more money for small business to reinvest. Our previous government announced measures in May which set out to combat this, yet so far the measures announced by this government are insufficient. When will this government finally recognize the importance of small business and announce immediately meaningful tax cuts?
The Honourable Minister of Economic and Rural Development.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I will reiterate that we are committed to business here in the province of Nova Scotia. We've demonstrated that commitment, and we will continue to do that. We will continue to do that. We've helped the construction industry of Nova Scotia with the new home rebate. We will continue with the efforts and the track that we are currently on, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Clare.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Minister of Transportation and Infrastructure Renewal. Mr. Speaker, we heard lots of talk of stimulus from government, especially in regards to highway and infrastructure. However, with potential cuts to highway project, it begs an answer from this minister. So my question to the minister is, have any highway or infrastructure projects been cancelled or delayed due to funding reallocation this year?
The Honourable Minister of Transportation and Infrastructure Renewal.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I thank the member opposite for his question. When it comes to, of course, having stimulus funding, we're on a constant flow, I want you to know, with projects coming and going. We submit lists, we hear back from the federal department. The federal department, for one reason or another, looks at this project or that project, and there's a lot of give and take being involved. There are projects where I want to assure you that at times I question why they're not going forward, yet we continue to be in touch with Ottawa and we continue to put forth the best case available. This is a project which we support, this is a project the Nova Scotians want, and we go back and forth on a number of occasions, and at this stage, there are many negotiations still yet to be finalized.
The Honourable Member for Clare on your first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, the previous government delayed on providing this House a priority list for highways, and we heard so much about change from the current government. I hope we can expect something different today. So my question to the minister is, will the minister undertake to table the priority list for highway projects in Nova Scotia?
The Honourable Minister of Transportation and Infrastructure Renewal.
Thank you again, Mr. Speaker, and thank you to the member opposite. And I know that that member at one time served in cabinet, and I know he's served in a number of important positions. As the cabinet minister responsible for highways, when projects are brought to my attention and we look at them on a first-come, first-served basis, when we make sure that we have the money available, when the issues are finally, when we look back on the issues that are important to you as a member or to members on this side for a particular project, I want you to know that when the money is not there, sometimes there have to be tough decisions that are going to have to be made. Mr. Speaker, I assure all members of the House that all projects are looked at very carefully, sometimes because of various delays. The election, for example, was a time that during the last number of months that no tenders could be signed during that particular time. There will not be projects that will all be completed in this budget year, but I want you to know all projects are being considered.
The Honourable Member for Clare on his final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, the maintenance and improvement of our highways is not only good for economic development, but it's crucial to keeping our roads safe and our drivers secure. So my final question to the Minister, when can we expect a highway priority list to be tabled in this House?
The Honourable Minister of Transportation and Infrastructure Renewal.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and thank you again to the member for that question. We all, of course, completely agree that safety remains a priority for roads in this province. And in addition to economic development, on many occasions, particularly in rural parts of the province, it is crucial that roads are maintained in such a fashion as goods, people and services can move from one end of the province to the other. This government will continue to make sure that we... Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I want the member opposite to know that we will consider it.
The Honourable Minister of Transportation has the floor.
Thank you. To the member opposite, I know that because of the good issues that you've brought to my attention, we will continue to address the issues in your constituency, members on that side, particularly some members, of course, who have met with me privately about their concerns, and members of my own caucus. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. The Honourable Member for Cape Breton North.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question through you is to the Minister of Service Nova Scotia Municipal Relations. Mr. Speaker, prior to the last election, the NDP went out of their way to gain political favour within the CBRM. From their own election correspondence, and I quote, "The NDP is prepared to undertake improvements to the equalisation formula in consultation with the CBRM, UNSM and other stakeholders, but within the context of a balanced budget," end quote. Even their election material started to veer away from their prior enthusiasm for the CBRM. Mr. Speaker, after 100 days in office, will the Minister inform this House of what commitments she's made to Nova Scotia's second largest municipality, its Mayor and Council?
The Honourable Minister of Service, Nova Scotia and Municipal Relations.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and thank you for that question. I welcome an opportunity to meet with the Mayor and members of the Council in Cape Breton. I'm just waiting for when the House rises. That will be my first priority, to travel to Cape Breton.
The Honourable Member for Cape Breton North on his first supplementary.
Well, Mr. Speaker, after 100 days, she's had lots of opportunity to travel to Cape Breton, but apparently that's not the case. And as the Minister would know, the CBRM is the second largest metropolitan area in our province with over 100,000 residents. And I think, Mr. Speaker, they're due the presence of a minister to go down and talk to them about their issues. But what has been clear from this is the minister hasn't taken the time, from what sounds, to even talk to them, let alone visit Cape Breton or meet with their officials and council and communicate with those individuals. Mr. Speaker, will the minister please inform this House how she possibly can meet the infrastructure and community support needs of the CBRM if she won't even talk to them?
The Honourable Minister of Service, Nova Scotia and Municipal Relations.
Thank you. It was a very busy first 100 days, and I've met with every group that has asked to meet with me. And unfortunately, I did not have a request from CBRM for a meeting. But as I repeat, it is my first priority to travel to Cape Breton as soon as the House rises, and I welcome the opportunity to meet the Mayor and Council members in Cape Breton.
The Honourable Member for Cape Breton North on your final supplementary.
Well, Mr. Speaker, I do welcome the direction of the Minister to at least make a commitment to go at some place at a time to Cape Breton, and hopefully it won't be another 100 days before she makes that trip to Cape Breton, because the people there deserve it. And hopefully while she's there, unlike the Minister of Economic Development, she does more than have tea and dinners and networking. It's about action and results the people of that area that have been looking for, from municipal relations, from economic development. Mr. Speaker, what is clear is that in the 100-plus days of being a government, they have no plan for the second-largest municipality in this province. So again, to the Minister, what types of issues will she discuss with them, and more importantly, commitments she'll make to the people of the Cape Breton Regional Municipality?
The Honourable Minister of Service, Nova Scotia and Municipal Relations.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To answer the question about what questions I'll be answering are the questions that I'll be asked by the Mayor. And with the consultation and discussion, I will make commitments based on their requests within the context of a balanced budget. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Bedford Birch Cove.
Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Minister of Transportation and Infrastructure Renewal. Mr. Speaker, on September 11, 2009, the member from Halifax, Clayton Park, and I sent a letter to the Minister of Transportation and Infrastructure Renewal outlining our concerns about the replacement of the Fairview Overpass. This construction project will last until at least March 2010. Mr. Speaker, in our letter, we offered the Minister some constructive suggestions for easing the gridlock. My question to the Minister, since this replacement is set to begin, I would like to know if you've read the letter and examined our suggestions.
The Honourable Minister of Transportation and Infrastructure Renewal.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I thank the member from Bedford Birch Cove for this important question, because I've heard from many Nova Scotians who are regular commuters on that very busy stretch of highway, and the more suggestions and the more input that we receive, the better, because there will be delays, there will be inconveniences, but it is work that is necessary to go forth on. Your September 11th correspondence has crossed my desk. I have had regular meetings with members of my staff, and I know there's been some interaction between the HRM, as there usually is on issues such as this, and the Department of Transportation and Infrastructure Renewal. We are currently in the middle of an education process to make sure that people are well aware of what is happening during the busy rush hours to and from. And I would like to table this particular piece of information, which, of course, will be brought forward to the residents in your community and the residents member from Halifax Clayton Park. It's, of course, safety first, but it does take these advice, take alternate routes, drive a bit earlier and later than usual, take a carpool, and make Metro Transit work for you.
Okay.
So I want the member opposite to know that we're listening to your concerns.
Thank you. Thank
we're
you,
listening
member.
To your constituents. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Bedford Birch Cove on your first supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I have seen the ads and heard the discussion on the radio this morning, but the member from Clayton Park and I are very concerned about the indications that lanes traveling into Halifax are going to be reduced to just one, with two lanes going out. Now, this is a recipe for traffic chaos in HRM. Mr. Speaker, thousands of residents drive over this overpass every day. With so much traffic from the outlying areas of HRM, this construction will cause massive traffic congestion and huge delays. My question to the Minister, what provisions has your department put in place to alleviate the heavy traffic congestion we are sure to see from this replacement project?
The Honourable Minister of Transportation and Infrastructure Renewal.
Thank you again. Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I thank the member opposite for this question. There is no doubt there's going to be inconveniences and there are going to be delays. You know, it has been closely looked at by members of the department that I am fortunate enough to be the minister of, and also the Streets and Roads Division within the HRM. It has been decided that there would not be reversing lanes. It would cause too much difficulty, particularly during winter construction. Winter construction is going to cause some real concerns in that particular dreadlock, which we face at every time, and I know that in many occasions when it comes to deadlock, that's where it happens each and every morning. But with the confusing of reversing lanes, it's been decided that would not be a good idea, that we have a regular traffic pattern so that we would not have to put up with this reversing lanes as they tune every day. Winter is the difficult time for when it comes to construction. That's why the decision is made not just by my department, but by the department.
Thank you. Thank you, Minister.
Yeah, not a bad speech, though.
Yeah. The Honourable... The Honourable Member for Bedford Birch Cove on your final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, reversing lanes was just one of the many suggestions that the member and I gave to you in that letter. The mayor of HRM has already stated to us that they cannot add buses, for example, during peak hours to help ease congestion because they don't have any more buses to add. My question to the minister, is your government prepared to assist HRM financially so they can rent buses for peak hours of traffic? And have you spoken to your own government about allowing public service employees the opportunity for flex hours to relieve congestion?
The Honourable Minister of Transportation and Infrastructure Renewal.
Thank you again, Mr. Speaker, and I thank the member opposite for the question. The Fairview Overpass project is one that is a top priority for this government and a top priority for the HRM. We are in regular communication with the city, with the regional municipality on this issue. We're looking forward to their input. We're looking forward to the concerns that are going to be brought forward to us. Metro Transit is an important part of the solution. It's an important part of the solution because in many occasions, and I see it in my community, Mr. Speaker, as I drive to and from, one person, one vehicle. I would suggest that we look at that particular bottleneck. We look at it as a good test to see how we can make an improvement to the Fairview overpass. It's a project of some importance, and we look forward to be completed on time as of March 1st, 2010.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'll recognize the Honourable Member for Cape Breton West.
Mr. Speaker, my question through you is to the Minister of Economic and Rural Development. The Minister yesterday indicated to the host that he met with the Port Authority in Sydney. The Sydney and Area Chamber of Commerce has identified the dredging of Sydney Harbour as a top priority for its 600 members. The previous government has contributed $2 million to this project. Before and during the election, the NDP were in favour of this project. My question to the Minister is this. What steps have you taken as Minister, not your department, you as Minister, taken to move the dredging of Sydney Harbour forward and making it a key plank to the Gateway Initiative?
The Honourable Minister of Economic and Rural Development.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and thank you for the question. And yes, it is true that I met with the Port Authority, and I thought we had a very, very good introductory meeting, and we will continue to move forward. We've had one meeting. So.
Okay. The Honourable Member for Cape Breton West on your first supplementary.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Speaker. And maybe somehow we can get into the hansard, a shrug of the shoulders, one meeting. I don't know what that means. But anyway, Mr. Minister, as you know, the dredging of Sydney Harbour is not only important to Cape Breton, but it is important for the economic development right across Nova Scotia. Among the benefits of dredging the harbour are the fact that Nova Scotia Power would be able to bring in larger ships of coal into the port, and thus cutting down on the number of shipments that would be needed. That meaning would probably mean stabilization of prices for all Nova Scotians. Yesterday, in Hansard, you said, "We've entertained. I've attended dinners. I've done some networking." My question to you is quite simple, Mr. Speaker. When is this minister going to come forward with a real plan for the people of Cape Breton regarding the dredging of Sydney Harbour, instead of simply entertaining, attending dinners, and networking?
The Honourable Minister of Economic and Rural Development.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And, you know, I think as we move forward, it's very, very important that we meet with people, that we see what their needs are, and it's incumbent also some of the communities that we've met with, including Sydney, we're interested in seeing their plan. We've had a verbal, they gave us a verbal presentation. My ask for them was to provide that to me in writing, and I trust that they will do that in due time.
The Honourable Member for Cape Breton West on your final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, and I would suggest to the Minister that maybe if he asked his department to look in the files, he would already have a copy of what the plan is for the dredging of Sydney Harbour. Now, Mr. Speaker, we know that the dredging is important for the economic rebirth in Cape Breton. And as well, we know that another key plank of the Gateway Initiative is maintenance and improvement of the Sydney to Port Hawkesbury rail line. The current subsidy for this crucial piece of infrastructure, it will soon run out. Mr. Speaker, is this minister prepared to continue the subsidy for this railroad so that the Port of Sydney will be an integral part of the Atlantic Gateway? Yes or no, Mr. Minister? Yes or no?
The Honourable Minister of Economic and Rural Development.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And, Mr. Speaker, actually, the railway hasn't approached me yet. And I certainly would encourage...
The Honourable Minister of Economic and Rural Development has the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And I would encourage the member opposite to pass the message along that I'd be willing to meet with them at any time.
The Honourable Member for Glace Bay.
Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Minister of Service, Nova Scotia, Municipal Affairs. Mr. Speaker, the government's mixed residential or commercial energy rebate program would appear to be flawed. Nova Scotians are not happy with it. It has caused confusion for a lot of people. People who are not receiving an income from their non-residential space are being charged more to have their oil tanks filled. Mr. Speaker, this is a direct hit on seniors and those who lived on a fixed income. And my question for the Minister is, what is being done for people who receive no income from their property use yet still are being charged more to heat it?
The Honourable Minister of Service, Nova Scotia, and Municipal Relations.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And I unfortunately don't really understand the essence of the question, so could I please have that question repeated? I apologize.
Yes, you may. I'll ask the member again if he would ask this question.
Would you like me to start from the very beginning, Mr. Speaker? Would you like me to do that? Perhaps a little slower, Mr. Speaker. I'm asking the Minister what's being done for people who receive no income from their property use, but they're being charged more to actually heat it, what's known as the Commercial Energy Rebate Program.
The Honourable Minister of Service, Nova Scotia, and Municipal Relations.
Thank you very much. What I'm going to answer that, and I will make apologies, but I will get back to the Honourable Member with the information probably by later on today. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Glace Bay on your first supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Perhaps a little explanation is in order here, Mr. Speaker. The rebate has not been designed, apparently, with the user in mind. This rebate requires that a 4-page application has to be filled out each and every time, and the application can only be submitted in April, July, October, and January of each year. And then the applicants are told that they have 4 to 6 weeks to wait for their paperwork to be processed each and every time. Mr. Speaker, that isn't an easy process, and one people likely have mixed-use properties do not have accounting departments. So my next question for the Minister is, in the past 102 days that this government has been in power, what has the Minister done to eliminate all of that red tape?
The Minister of Service, Nova Scotia, and Municipal Relations.
Thank you. I don't think that there's anything wrong with being able to say that I am not familiar with this question. I have not received any complaints or literature or any letters from anybody with this particular difficulty. If the honourable member would provide me with the information that I need, then I would be able to answer his question in a timely manner. Thank you.
The honourable member for Glace Bay on your final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, I have the question. She's supposed to have the answers. But perhaps, Mr. Speaker, she may want to talk to her premier. And let me tell you why, Mr. Speaker. On October 30th of last year, the premier, while he was still on this side of the House, had some serious concerns about the very same program. So, Mr. Speaker, it would make sense that after 102 days in power, no changes have been made. But, Mr. Speaker, I'm going to direct my final question to the Premier. And, Mr. Speaker, I'm going to use his own words that he spoke to then-Premier Rodney MacDonald. And, Mr. Speaker, I quote, "My question for the Premier is this. Why is this Premier imposing this kind of red tape on so many Nova Scotia families and seniors?"
The Honourable the Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My understanding with respect to the program was that it had to do with the way in which the databases were composed. I remember the former minister indicating that coordination had been looked after. I myself have not received any further complaints about the program to date, but I'm sure that the minister, as she's represented to the member opposite, would be happy to look at the program to see if there are further complaints. And if there are ways in which we can deal with red tape to in order to smooth that process, then we'd be happy to do so.
The honourable member from Cape Breton North.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is through you to the Minister of Justice. Mr. Speaker, the people of Spring Hill and Antigonish have had their faith in this government shattered by the move of the minister to walk away from commitments to construct correctional facilities in their communities. Mr. Speaker, will the minister confirm that this is not the case and that he will continue to move forward with the Spring Hill and Antigonish facilities?
The Honourable Minister of Justice.
As I've stated, Mr. Speaker, earlier in the House, that the business case is being developed. Once the business case is completed, action will be taken.
The Honourable Member for Cape Breton North on your first supplementary.
Well, Mr. Speaker, the people of Antigonish and Spring Hill will be interested by that lack of a non-answer from the Minister. Mr. Speaker, much effort and planning went into realizing new correctional infrastructure in partnership with both of these communities. In Spring Hill, the business case, as the minister would like to suggest, is a working partnership with Corrections Canada, which just makes plain sense. What doesn't is the move of this government to turn their backs on these communities, infrastructure, and needed jobs. Mr. Speaker, will the minister state unequivocally that he'll honour the commitments made to Spring Hill and Antigonish, or is he going to continue to play politics with these communities?
The Honourable Minister of Justice.
Mr. Speaker, the opposition there seems to be, it's very important to them that the minister go to their communities. I want to state that I've been in those communities. I've had the pleasure of meeting with them, hearing their concerns from a number of other communities. Each are important. And once the business case is finished, we will make a very informed decision that's in the best interest of the taxpayers of Nova Scotia, that will stay in line with the needs of the correctional worker and the people that have to reside in the institutions.
The member for Cape Breton North on your final supplementary.
Well, thank you, Mr. Speaker. And apparently, the new government has spent over the last 100 days obviously doing some visiting, having some tea, having some dinner, some networking, but not taking action on the things that are important to those communities and those people. And since the minister fails to deal with this issue, maybe I can try his colleague, the Minister of Service, Nova Scotia Municipal Relations. Mr. Speaker, since she's now into travel mode, would the minister commit to visit both Spring Hill and Antigonish and meet with local officials to explain why the Minister of Justice refuses to honour the commitment of new correctional facilities for their communities?
The Minister of Service, Nova Scotia, and Municipal Relations.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. If invited by the municipalities to speak with anybody to do anything to do with the municipalities, my door is open, and I would welcome the invitation if invited. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Dartmouth East.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. My question today is for the Minister of Education. On the day of the swearing-in, somebody said 102 days ago, I had the pleasure to speak with the Minister of Education about the renovations that have been long overdue, many times announced, many times apparently budgeted for, but not yet even started at Prince Andrew High School in Dartmouth. Those renovations were first announced by the Department of Education in 2003. We're told they were going to start in 2007 and be completed in 2011. They still haven't been completed. I know the minister knows the importance of these renovations. So my question to the minister is, when is the tender going out for those renovations?
The Honourable Minister of Education.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I share the concern of the Honourable Member for Prince Andrew High School because a number of students from my own constituency attend that school. And certainly I've been inquiring as to the capital budget and how it impacts on that school. And during the supply debate, hopefully I'll be able to answer those questions. But I don't think it's appropriate for me to be specifying timelines and money related to the budget during the question period. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Dartmouth East on his first supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. According to the original estimate for renovations, it was supposed to cost $8.85 million to renovate the school. And that's from Department of Education estimates. That number has almost certainly gone up now because a lot of the items in the school that were supposed to be renovated have now collapsed or deteriorated further. As I noted before, the work was supposed to be completed by 2011, and while I understand the minister may wish to give further detail and estimates, which I look forward to, this government, during the election campaign, committed that they would honour every single one of the previous government's infrastructure commitments, and this was one that was made over and over by the department. So can she confirm that those renovations are going ahead?
The Honourable Minister of Education.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Certainly, the issue of the renovations and upgrading to Prince Andrew High School has been a topic of interest in this legislature for a number of years. And I remember on an annual basis during the supply debates estimates that the former member for Dartmouth East had a deep interest in Prince Andrew High School and would ask the question of the former government. And I certainly will be prepared to give some details during estimates. Thank you.
The Honourable Member from Dartmouth East on your final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I'm glad the Minister of Education brought up my predecessor, the former member for Dartmouth East, because, in fact, during the election campaign, in a debate that any member can watch on YouTube currently if they want, the member said it would be an immediate priority of an NDP government to immediately issue the tender for the renovations at Prince Andrew High School. It is now 102 days, and where's the tender?
The Honourable Minister of Education.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Stay tuned. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Yarmouth.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Minister of Community Services and Housing. I would like to know what protocol is with that minister to respond into correspondence, i.e. emails, letters, phone calls, etc. And all members of this House would like to know the time frame that she gets back to people. Is it an hour from the time she receives it, a day, a week, a month, a year, or never.
The Honourable Minister of Community Services.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and thank you to the Honourable Member for his question. Due to the fact that I come from a very strong communications background, I very often there's emails that I get back to people immediately, and it depends on the email or the telephone call. So I do respect each and every contact that's made with me, and we take due process to get back to the individual or the group in a timely manner. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Yarmouth on his first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, I thank you very much for getting me that answer. Mr. Speaker, I sent the Minister on August 12th a letter requesting a meeting. I did a follow-up letter on September 17th with no response to either letter. I have here an article by the local media, The Vanguard, and Michael Gorham. In his article, he's tried for 2 weeks to have an interview with that minister and no response. I have another article here with the Mayor Mooney from my town asking for a meeting about the housing crisis in our community, and that minister has yet to respond. We had a meeting with two of her staff, but she has never stepped foot in our community. I want to know, will that minister meet with my community to talk about the housing crisis that we are in Yarmouth?
The Honourable Minister of Community Services.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. I must comment to the Honourable Member that what he's saying is not true. I had spoken to the reporters. Any calls that I receive that are filtrated through to my office directly to me, I respond immediately. And also with respect to Mayor Mooney, the staff met and we did correspond, and I did send out correspondence to him with respect to the staff meeting with him. So I'm not quite sure if he has any kind of information he would like to table so I can see proof of his comments. I'd appreciate that. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Yarmouth on your final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, I'd be honoured to table all the documents I just mentioned. There's the two letters, Mr. Speaker. There's the two articles, and I think I heard that Michael Gorman is misleading the people of Yarmouth, and he is doing the article in the local Vanguard that he quotes that he's tried for 2 weeks to have correspondence with that minister, and she never returned his calls. Mr. Speaker, we have asked that minister to meet with the citizens of Yarmouth. There's a housing crisis in Yarmouth, Mr. Speaker. We have 120 people that's displaced right now in Yarmouth. We have winter coming, and that minister's turned her back, like all members of that government. The Premier has not even entered our community yet. Mr. Speaker, there happens to be an airline coming to our community morning and night. She could fly down in the morning and fly back at night, and we will make sure that there's tea and biscuits. If that minister would come down and tell the people of our community what they're going to do about the housing crisis.
Okay, question. The Honourable Minister of Community Services.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I would like to say, with respect to the housing crisis, staff actually has met with the mayor and the councillors as soon as that we received indication that there was an issue there. They met. Senior staff went to Yarmouth and met with the members of council and people that organizations that required a meeting. Okay.
The Honourable Minister of Community Services has the floor.
I would like to state that I am extremely accessible and that I have always been that way, and I invite people to come and speak with me or give me a call, and I respond to them. So
the Honourable Member for King's West.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Minister of of Natural Resources. Mr. Speaker, Brickadoon Children's Camp Society is a not-for-profit organization that is working to develop an exceptional year-round facility for residential camps for children and youth living with a chronic illness. This exceptional work and the service this facility will provide is tied to extensive outdoor recreation for these children. However, Mr. Speaker, the land nearby is in danger, as it is owned by Wagner Forest Management, who is now in the process of selling the land on the world market. My question to the Minister, the Aylesford and Loon Lake Property Owners Association and Brickadoon want a meeting to deal with the province to help purchase land in this area. Will you and the MLA for King South meet with these groups?
The Honourable Minister of Natural Resources.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And by all means, I'd be very pleased to meet with any group. So.
The Honourable Member for Kings West on your first supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. They did ask. It is now over a week, but I guess eventually they will hear. Mr. Speaker, Brickadoon supplies a wide range of outdoor activities. These activities stem upon having adequate land nearby and is not invaded by any sort of commercial development. My question to the Minister, is the Minister aware of how critical a buffer zone is to Brickadoon, a world-class facility for chronically ill children, to protect intense development within metres of their facility?
The Honourable Minister of Natural Resources.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Well, I have to say that I'm not particularly familiar with that facility, but I could recognize that having a kind of a pristine environment around it would kind of add to the quality of it. I want the Honourable Member to be aware that the people who own the abutting land, it's private property, but I'd be more than happy to meet with the group to discuss their issues.
The Honourable Member for Kings West on your first supplementary. No, excuse me, your final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And for the Minister's information, their prime building will be within 100 feet of land owned by Wagner. Mr. Speaker, Wagner's Forest Management is a forest management organization. This is a tremendous opportunity for Wagner Forest Management to be a good corporate citizen, partner with the province to protect these lands. We can ill afford these lands to be purchased by the wrong hands. Will the Minister commit today to making every attempt to purchase Wagner-owned lands for the protection of Brickadoon?
The Honourable Minister of Natural Resources.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Well, I think the member could recognize that if I made that commitment to him today, there'd just be a lineup of members across the benches asking for the same thing, which I think would be extremely unrealistic of me to do that for him or anybody else, but I'd be glad to take a look and see what would be possible.
The Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservatives.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question through you is to the Minister of Community Services. Your colleague, the member from Dartmouth North, said in this legislature on November 12th of last year, and I quote, "It was important for the 81,000 individuals living in poverty, including 19,000 children in Nova Scotia, to have an increase in their basic allowance so that those living in poverty can purchase the basic necessities. Since you became minister nearly 4 months ago, have you and the member from Dartmouth North discussed the basic allowance, and what action have you taken on behalf of those families and individuals living in poverty?"
The Honourable Minister of Community Services.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Actually, that is a budget question. Thank you.
Okay. The Honourable Minister, the Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservatives, on your first supplementary.
Well, I could repeat the first one because obviously it was misunderstood, but my first supplementary is this. Our government allocated an additional $19 million towards the basic allowance late last year,
an increase that was severely criticized by the NDP members. Can this minister provide the House today with details of her plan on changes to the basic allowance?
The Honourable Minister of Community Services.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and thank you, Honourable Member, for the question. I will give you a little bit further explanation. I had real difficulty when I looked at the figures and what we had available in the budget, because it was the former government's budget, and I know that they took a lot of criticism for that $4 a month increase. And it is a very difficult situation when you're looking at the amount of monies that you have available. And it is the former government's budget, but we are looking forward to go making changes.
The Minister of Community Services has the floor.
We are looking forward to consult and to look at what decisions we can make to help the most vulnerable people, and we're going forward with that after this particular budget. Thank you.
The Leader of the Progressive Conservatives on your final supplementary.
Well, Mr. Speaker, I would suggest that the Minister understand and learn the difference between a budget issue and a policy issue. But I will ask the following question. When the announcement of the additional $19 million for the basic allowance was made last fall, this is the party, now the government, that said it wasn't enough. My question to the Minister is, what amount does your NDP government plan to increase for this basic allowance?
The Honourable Minister of Community Services.
I can answer the question myself. I have a great deal of respect for Bill Estabrooks. Thank you. Mr. Speaker. Amberley.
The Honourable Minister of Community Services.
Mr. Speaker, I do understand the fact is that it is not enough money, and it does pain me that that's the situation our province is in because of a former government that did not dedicate themselves to help the vulnerable, and I'm going forth to look at what we can do to help the vulnerable. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Glace Bay.
Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Minister of Service, Nova Scotia Municipal Relations. Mr. Speaker, when will the Minister act on past NDP promises and allow individual municipalities to ban the use of cosmetic pesticides?
The Honourable Minister of Service, Nova Scotia Municipal Relations.
Thank you very much, and thank you very much for that question. I am very pleased to say that interdepartmentally with the with health and with the environment and with Service Nova Scotia Municipal Relations, we are proceeding on our commitment that we have made during the election and commitment to Nova Scotians. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Glace Bay on your first supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Since the Supreme Court of Canada ruling in 2001, the move to ban the cosmetic use of pesticides at the local level has continued, with over 60 municipalities across this country passing their own laws. In that unanimous ruling, Mr. Speaker, the justices wrote that such a law is best achieved by the level of government closest to the citizens affected. So my question to the Minister is, when will her government provide powers to municipalities other than Halifax Regional Municipality and permit them to ban the use of cosmetic pesticides? When exactly will that happen, Mr. Speaker?
The Honourable Minister of Service, Nova Scotia and Municipal Relations.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. At this time, we are looking at making sure that we are following the recommendations as put forward by the Union of Nova Scotia Municipalities, and we honour their commitment for this and the recommendation. And as I speak, things we're working towards that. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Glace Bay.
Mr. Speaker, while Halifax is the only municipal unit in this province with the authority to ban pesticides, there are other towns that are keen to introduce similar bans and are pushing for that right. The town of Truro, Mr. Speaker, passed a bylaw last year regulating residential use of cosmetic pesticides starting this year. Very democratic of the town of Truro, Mr. Speaker. One might say new and democratic, as a matter of fact. Mr. Speaker, my question to the minister is, when will your 102-day-old government amend the Municipal Government Act and allow communities to ban the use of cosmetic pesticides?
The Honourable Minister of Service, Nova Scotia and Municipal Relations.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I am going to defer this over to the Minister of the Environment, not because I do not know the answer to this, but he is... But the Minister's Department is the lead with this bit of work, so I would pass it over to the Minister. Thank you.
The Honourable Minister of the Environment.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, to the member opposite, I just want to point out that this is on particular on my radar screen, and we're reviewing all the options. I also want to point out, Mr. Speaker, that I had the pleasure of meeting my counterparts, my counterparts in Newfoundland, and we are working towards harmonizing this and having more of a regional approach, Mr. Speaker. So I just want to assure the member opposite that this is on my radar screen. Thank you very much.
The Honourable Member for Argyle.
You're dying for a question, Hickam.
Order. Time has expired.
This podcast was previously aired on Legislative Television. The Speaker of the Nova Scotia House of Assembly grants permission to record the televised proceedings of the legislature for use in schools and for other purposes, such as private study, research, review, or newspaper summary. Television and radio broadcasters may make use of recorded excerpts of the televised proceedings in their news or public affairs programs for the purposes of fair and accurate reports of proceedings. Program material may not be used for political party advertising, election campaigns, or any other politically partisan activity. Any other commercial use or rebroadcast of these televised proceedings requires the express written approval of the Speaker.